dodges. I ride in this wind on my good horse. I call you my shiny black bears to the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody.
Tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, W201CD Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, or KFAR Knoxville. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. This week on the program, a true story about a corporation so mad for power that it threatens and harasses people who stand up to it with lawsuits and a private police force. So unethical that it deliberately contaminates the environment to force its products on unwilling customers. So pernicious that it's able to portray its victims as perpetrators, turn neighbor against neighbor, and establish a climate of fear. So greedy that it aims to control the world food supply by using intellectual property laws to enforce its extortionate demands. Facing down this behemoth is an elderly farm couple from the prairies of Saskatchewan. Tonight, Percy Schmeiser versus the Monsanto Corporation. Schmeiser spoke in Ithaca last week, both downtown and at the Cornell campus. We're going to hear the talk he delivered at Cornell and a combination of questions from the audience at both venues. And then another installment from Disciplined Minds, a critical look at salaried professionals and the soul-battering system that shapes their lives by Jeff Schmidt.
We've all seen the movies about gangsters and thugs, about cunning mob bosses and the lords of the drugs. But listen now closely if you've got the time, 'cause I'd like to tell you about organized crime.
Last week, the Supreme Court of Canada heard a case of what the Toronto Star calls David versus Goliath. It's the case of Percy Schmeiser versus Monsanto. Monsanto claims theft of intellectual property for a transgenic canola plant that they claim property rights in. Percy Schmeiser claims that this is that the presence of these transgenic organisms has to do with gene flow. Or biological pollution, as it's often called in the literature opposed to genetically modified organisms. That case has been through some of the Canadian courts. It's sitting before the Supreme Court. They've reserved judgment. Like the Supreme Court in the United States, the judgment will come sometime after. There are multiple issues involved in this case. And as Percy Schmeiser has said many times, this is an issue that goes far beyond the one farmer and the one corporation involved. It involves patents on living things. What patents on living things can mean, and I'll just say by way of introduction, and then let Mr. Schmeiser, who's become an international celebrity for his David and Goliath status, I'll just say that there are three property systems in contest around the world on the issue of plants. One is the UN notion of the common property of mankind. This was more or less law until. We have the Trio and Reedy, the Rio Treaty that made biota property of nation states. So then there's a kind of a conflict between whether there's a common heritage of mankind, you know, it takes 8,000 years to make a rice plant, it takes a village to grow a child, and so on, and that rice plant has some status as a common property of mankind, or whether nation states own biota. India claims that it owns the rights to something like basmati rice because it grows in India. And then the third model, of course, is Monsanto's, that plants are like anything else. They can be patented, that innovations have to be patented because that's what gives the drive for investment. Without a patent-protected right, nobody would invest in plant research. And that's their argument for enforcing their property rights. And globally, this has become quite a big issue. Monsanto has decided not to try to enforce their property rights in southern Brazil, where GM soya is spreading like wildfire. And I guess they're content, probably, to take the sales of glyphosate and leave the farmers' license fees uncollected. They probably can't collect them. But in the United States and Canada, they have brought cases to court, and they've explicitly said that they want to make an example of people who violate their property rights. And making that example, we have before us, the example is Percy Schmeiser.
Well, thank you very much for the kind introduction. I think I should give a brief background so you know where I'm really coming from as a farmer from Western Canada in the heart of the prairies. My wife and I were seed developers in canola, and I started growing canola in 1947. And we were known in the area in central Saskatchewan as seed developers and seed saver. Seed developers in canola and a seed saver, which like hundreds of thousands of farmers around the world used their seed from year to year. I had more of a background than just farming. I was a member of the provincial legislature, parliament, and in that position, I was on many agricultural committees, both on the provincial level and representing my province on the federal level. I was also mayor of my community for over a quarter century. So all my life, I've been involved with agricultural issues. And I always thought and felt that I really worked hard for rules, laws, and regulations that would benefit farmers. Now, it's no longer what can happen or may happen, but what has happened with the introduction of GMOs when regulatory approval was given on soybeans and canola, both across the border to the south of us, North Dakota and Montana, and also in Saskatchewan or Western Canada on GMO canola. So that gives you a brief background. Now, I think that the whole issue, I used to say, can be divided. The whole issue of GMOs, or genetic engineering, I always like to refer to as genetic modified organisms, can be divided into three main parts. But now I think it can be divided into about five different areas. First of all, property rights of farmers versus the intellectual property rights of multinationals like Monsanto. Then there's the whole food issue. What effect is GMO foods having on our whole issue of food, health or safety of food? And then a third issue, the environment. Now we also have the issue where Monsanto has asked for regulatory approval on GMO wheat in both our countries. And another very important issue that has come up in the last year is pharma plants or prescription drugs being made from plants. There's a really another important issue that has developed from the introduction of GMOs, and that's the whole new fear culture that has been established by a corporation like Monsanto on the prairies and the northern plains of the United States. And then there's the labeling issue. So there's now many, many issues that have come out of this. Now, I'll go into immediately what happened to me. 1998, Monsanto laid a lawsuit against me without any previous contact with me. And in that lawsuit, they stated that I had somehow illegally obtained Monsanto's GMO canola and planted it and grew it. And therefore, I infringed on their patent. So it became a patent infringement case. Now, immediately at that time, we were very concerned. When I say we, my wife, because we had done almost a half a century of research and development in canola, where we were able to develop various varieties of canola that was resistant to certain diseases we had in canola on the prairies, and also in regards to yield and so on. So we were very concerned at that time because all of a sudden we realized that possibly our canola that we had developed over that period of time was now contaminated and polluted. And we stood up to Monsanto and said, if you have any of your GMOs in our pure canola seed, then you are liable and there should really be a liability issue and you should be sued for contaminating our property. And there was another reason we stood up to Monsanto at that time, and we felt that if farmers' rights are taken away to use their seed from year to year, all future development all over the world would be really stopped because were the new seeds and plants adaptable to soil and climatic conditions all over the world come from? It came from farmers. So that was some of the reasons we stood up to Monsanto. First of all our loss possibly of our pure seed. Now, it took 2 years of pretrial. Now, patent laws, like in most countries, come under federal jurisdiction. I had no choice of where the case would be heard. Federal Court of Canada, one judge. And often, we wished I could have had a judge and jury with some farmers on. that understood about how seeds can blow in the wind, cross-pollination, and so on. But I didn't have that choice. Now, in the 2 years of pre-trial, Monsanto withdrew all allegations that I had ever obtained their seed illegally. They had a record of who they sold their seed to, and they even had to admit it was a false allegation. But they said it didn't matter because they had found, at that time, some GMO canola, Monsanto's, in the ditch along one of my fields, and therefore I violated their patent. That is the basis it went to the federal court. After 2.5 weeks of trial, and that was an exceptionally long for a patent infringement case, what did the judge rule? And what the judge ruled, and I'll name some of those, judgments that he came down, is what brought my case to international attention. The most important issue he ruled on, he said it does not matter how Monsanto's GMO canola, and it could be soybeans or any GMO crop, gets into a farmer's field. He went on to specify how this could happen. Direct seed movement. And on the prairies, that was, at that time, that was the great biggest source of contamination. By wind, by birds, by bees, by floods, or cross-pollination. It doesn't matter how it gets there. And whether you're a conventional farmer like myself, or an organic farmer, if it gets into your crop, you no longer own your crop. All your seeds and plants becomes Monsanto's ownership. And that was a startling and really a bizarre ruling. He also ruled that all our seeds and plants goes to Monsanto. We were not allowed to use our seeds or plants again. And also all my profit from my 1998 crop goes to Monsanto. So those were some of the main rulings. And he also ruled that if a farmer ought to or should know, in my case, that your seed is contaminated, you're not allowed to use your seed. If it's contaminated with Monsanto's GMOs, you're not allowed to use your seed or buy any seed from a seed company if it's contaminated, unless you buy Monsanto's. So it really has took away a farmer's right to use his own seed from year to year. What happened after that? We appealed it to the Federal Court of Appeal. So another year of legal battles. And the Federal Court of Appeal now has 3 judges, again no jury. And it was a very narrow scope. Points of law, facts of law, and where the first judge erred in law. And an unusual decision from the Federal Court of Appeal was that although they didn't agree with the first judge's, all his decision, they still upheld it. Immediately when they didn't agree with all of his judgments of the first court judge, it should have been thrown out, but they still upheld it. So then I had 2 losses, Federal Court and Federal Court of Appeal. We then appealed it to the Supreme Court of Canada, and last May, it was the best news after 5 years legal battle, when the Supreme Court of Canada ruled in my favor to hear the case. And it went before the Supreme Court of Canada a week ago yesterday. But now it has become more than a simple patent infringement case. Now the whole issue of patenting life forms and higher life forms is taken in consideration. Use of patent and also liability issue. So there's many, many issues involved now with what will come from this Supreme Court decision. And I think it's important, and maybe I'll read some of the highlights of what was put forward to the Supreme Court last week. Number one, can living organisms, seeds, plants, genes, and human organs be owned and protected by corporate patents on intellectual property? Number two, can genetically modified traits invade noxious weeds and then become resistant to weed killers? That has already happened, because within 2 years after the introduction of GMO canola, a regular canola plant, conventional canola plant, had already developed into a super weed. And that new super weed, which we never ever had before, is on every farmland on the prairies and also into the northern plains. What is a super weed? Monsanto was not the only company that started selling GMO canola in 1996. There was 2 other ones, Pursuit Smart, Liberty Link, and Monsanto. Within 2 years, those 3 GMO crops had cross-pollinated into one conventional canola plant and they rendered it as a super weed, because now it takes a multitude of new chemicals to try and control it. Then number 3, can farmers' rights to grow conventional or organic crops be protected? Number 4, can farmers keep the ancient right to save their own seed? Now, Monsanto does not have a patent on a seed or plant in Canada. You cannot patent a seed or plant in Canada, but yet the first judge ordered that all my seeds and plants goes to Monsanto. Now, this is how Monsanto has done it. They have a patent on a gene, and they insert that gene into the seed, and they say they have invented the seed, and they own that seed. Although that seed could have thousands of other genes in it, they claim total ownership. When the seed becomes a plant, they claim ownership of the plant, of the transfer of the gene from the seed to the plant. So it goes on and on. Plant, seed, plant, and so on. Now the question arises, if they can put a gene into any higher life form, and a seed or plant in Canada is considered a higher life form, where do you stop? Animal, birds, bees, fish, and ultimately a human being. So that's why this case has become so important, because Monsanto is saying, once you insert one gene, they claim total ownership. And that was, again, about a year ago, Harvard University came to Canada and wanted to patent a mouse, because they had inserted a gene that made that mouse more suitable for cancer research. And it went through the whole same court system as my case has gone through, and they ended up in the Supreme Court of Canada about a year ago, and the decision came down that you cannot patent a mouse or a higher life form in Canada. So that was a major victory. You cannot patent a higher life form, but you can patent a higher life form in the United States. Canada went exactly opposite of the US Supreme Court. Now there's other issues that arise, not only the patent of a seed or plant or higher life forms, it extends much greater than that. The Ontario government, the Attorney General's Department, came behind me on my case as an intervener, and I think in the US you call it Friends of the Court. They were one of the interveners, and they acted as an intervener on the area, or in the area of healthcare, in breast cancer treatment, which already has several genes patented. And before you can use that breast cancer treatment, you have to get a license or pay a license fee to a company based in Utah. So not only that, but any analysis of that treatment cannot be done by research people in Ontario or any state. It has to be sent back to the original company, which I said is in Utah. So they estimate that it would increase healthcare costs at least four times, again by the insertion of a gene into an area that has, or into a composition of matter that has thousands of other genes. Those are some of the issues now before the Supreme Court. We don't know how long it will take, but they estimate about 6 months. So again, Monsanto does not have a patent on a seed or plant, and the whole issue now is centered around the whole patenting of life forms. Now, another very important item came up in Supreme Court, use of patent. Now, in the Patent Act, it says you violate a patent if you use that patent. I had never, ever used Monsanto's patent. To use the patent, I would have had to spray their herbicide Roundup, which is a glyphosate, on my canola crop. I had never done that, because in some of my fields, I would have killed 100% of my crop. But the judge ruled, in the first court, ruled that was immaterial. The fact that there was some plants in my field, I violated the patent. So that whole issue of use also will have to be decided. Another issue, when is a discovery, and when is an invention? So there are now many areas that will have to be considered. In the issue of contamination, Monsanto has said, especially the communication officer or person from Winnipeg, which is the Western headquarters, she said that my fields were contaminated from all the way from 95 to 98%. But I'd like to point out to you, that was their own in-house testing. What we had done for the court, I had samples taken from all my fields, 8 fields at that time, by the Department of Agriculture of Saskatchewan, and then they were sent to the University of Manitoba at Winnipeg, and they were analyzed and DNA testing done on it. And they found that 2 of my fields had no contamination, 1 of my fields had 1%, 2%, 8%, and in the ditch along my the field where we first noticed it, it was around 68%. But it was I had all third-party testing done. Monsanto's testing was all in-house testing. So who do you believe more? Monsanto's in-house or scientists from the University of Manitoba. So I thought I would bring that to your attention because this is what Monsanto is saying. Now, the whole issue of contracts, and that is something you never ever hear with the introduction of GMOs. How does it take away the control, freedom of speech, and freedom of expression from people, and especially farmers? And I think it's very important that this aspect is brought forward. Number one, I have a contract here, used in Canada, and also in some states, from Monsanto. And I'll just say, or give you some of the clauses, or read some of the clauses. Number one, you cannot use your own seed. Number two, you must always buy the seed from Monsanto. Number three, you can only, if you're a conventional farmer, you can only buy the chemicals from Monsanto. Number four, you must pay a $15 an acre technology or license fee each year to Monsanto. The next clause, if you commit some violation of this contract, you must sign a non-disclosure statement. You cannot say anything to the press or to your neighbor what Monsanto has done to you, and this could be a fine of $150 or $200 an acre, or even make you destroy your crop. You can't say nothing. So your farmer's freedom of speech and expression is taken away. Another clause, you must permit Monsanto's police force. And believe me, they have a very large police force in Western Canada, and they're a former ex-Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And you must permit their police to come onto your land for 3 years after you sign this contract, even though you grow it for 1 year. And they can go in your silos, your granaries, they can ask for your tax records, your farming records, anything, to see if you've been cheating or not. Now the latest clause they have added is that you can no longer sue or take Monsanto to court for whatever reason. So your right to even sue Monsanto is taken away from you. So that is some of the contracts that they get farmers to sign. How do they enforce that contract? Another brochure from Monsanto, and it's very interesting because across the center of it, it says, are you ready for all of this? So, but on the bottom, it states, if you think your neighbor has grown Monsanto's GMO canola or soybeans, you should inform on your neighbors. And what happens if a neighbor happens to do that to, or if a farmer happens to do that to his neighbor? They'll immediately send out two of their police, or ex-RCMP. We call them gene police in Canada. And I should say in the United States, they hire Pinkerton Investigation Services, who they use in the United States. And they'll send two, to a farmer's home and say, we have this tipper rumor that you're growing GMO canola or soybean, whatever the case, without a license. And a farmer will say, no, I've never bought your seed. I have nothing to do with your company. And they'll say, you're lying. And if you don't confess, we'll get you and we'll take you to court and you won't have a farm left. Now what happens as a result of that? I've had many farm wives phone me, crying on the phone, saying, Monsanto's people have been here. They threatened us. And I will advise them where they can go for legal help. But there's something else that happens, is that when these gene police, as we call them, leave a farmer's home, what do you think goes through a farmer or the farmer's wife? Was it this neighbor, or this neighbor, or this neighbor over here that has caused me this trouble? So now we have the breakdown of our rural social fabric, of farmers not trusting one another, of not speaking to one another, that whole fear culture. And believe me, my grandparents came from Europe, first to the United States around the 1890s. And then my grandparents, my parents then moved to Canada. And my parents and grandparents had to work together with our neighbors and other farmers to build our society, our infrastructure, our schools, hospitals, roads, and so on. Now you have that breakdown of our real social fabric, of people not trusting, a suspicion. And to me, the introduction of GMOs is one of the biggest or worst things that could have happened. It doesn't stop there in this new fear culture. Here's what farmers call an extortion letter. And we don't know how many thousands of these have been sent to farmers. I've got a good number of them that farmers have turned over to me. And in it, it states, and this generally happens if they can't find that farmer at home, but they know his mailing address, and they'll say, We have reason to believe that you might be growing Monsanto's GMO canola or soybeans without a license. We estimate you have 100 acres, 200 acres, 500 acres, and in lieu of us possibly not taking you to court, send us $200,000, $100,000, $50,000, and we may or may not take you to court. Can you imagine the fear in a farm family when they get a letter from a multi-billion dollar corporation, send us $100,000 because we think you might be growing it? So these are the things. Oh, there's another clause in here. You're not allowed to show this letter to anyone. So again, suppression of freedom of speech and right of speech is taken away. But it doesn't even stop with that. They'll take, if they can't find a farmer's, don't know a farmer's mailing address, and they couldn't find a farmer at home, they'll use a plane. And I'm serious about this, a plane or a helicopter. And they'll fly over the center of a farmer's canola or a soybean field. And normally our fields are 160 acres square. And they'll drop a Roundup herbicide spray bomb, their glyphosate, onto the center of a farmer's field. And then they'll fly back about a week later or 10 or 12 days later after the chemical Roundup has time to activate. That's Monsanto's Roundup. And if the farmer's canola or soybean has died where they hit it with the spray bomb, they know the farmer wasn't using Monsanto's GMO canola. If it hasn't died, they know the farmer is using Monsanto's GMO canola or soybeans. So that is the way they check on farmers. So that whole area of a fear culture, and believe me, it's real. Every farmer that testified for me in court on my behalf, or any farmer that speaks against Monsanto, will get one of these letters saying you're growing GMO canola or soybeans without a license. Some farmers have got this letter that haven't even grown canola on that land, but just a means of intimidation and harassment. Now, the other area I'd like to talk about is what has happened with the introduction of GMOs and what we have found. Number one, there is no such thing as containment. You cannot contain a life form, a life-giving form, as we call it back home, and when you put it into the environment, you can't build a wall high enough. And so it will spread by cross-pollination, direct seed movement, whirlwinds, small tornadoes, and so. You cannot contain it. Pollen will flow. And a lot of people feel that pollen only flows with wind or in the air. Pollen will move many other ways, as we've found. It'll brush off the feathers of a bird, a goose or duck, or brush off the fur of an animal, or even the running board of a half-ton truck if they happen to drive into a field and you drive to another farmer's field. So it doesn't only move by wind. Now I should give you an example. I think the first study has been completed in the world in regards how far will pollen flow. And the scientists at the University of Manitoba again, and Winnipeg, have found that even wheat pollen, which is a relatively heavy pollen, will stay airborne at least an hour. So they related to wind. How strong is your wind? That's how far pollen will flow with wind. So the distance, you don't know. So there is no such thing as containment. Number two, there's no such thing as coexistence. You cannot have a GMO farmer or a GMO in a region or a state or a province. It will destroy the organic farmer, and it will destroy the conventional farmer like myself. The GMO gene is the dominant gene, and eventually it will render everything GMO. Your choice is gone. Again, there is no such thing as coexistence. Choice is gone. Organic farmers back home now, two crops no longer can raise, soybeans and canola. All our seed now is contaminated with GMOs, and that happened within 4 or 5 years. So what right has any corporation or any individual to bring something into the environment or release into the environment, no matter how good or how bad it is, that destroys the property of others, destroys biodiversity, destroys crops that have been here for centuries? Nobody should have that right. And that is what has happened with the introduction of GMOs. Again, can you recall, and I asked this question many times, can you recall a life form, a life-giving form, a GMO, once it has been introduced in the environment? And the answer I've gotten from scientists all over the world is that they don't know at this time whether it can help ever be recalled back. But what are you going to recall back? Take, for instance, canola. It comes from the brassicale family. Close cousins, radishes, turnips, cauliflower, and a distant cousin like wild mustard. It is now cross-pollinating also into those market garden crops, again destroying more crops organic farmers no longer can raise. So what are you going to call back? It has now moved into those crops. How can you recall canola? And then also you now have the super wheat. How are you going to recall that back? Now wheat has become a major issue in North America in both our countries. If regulatory approval is given to GMO wheat, it comes from the grass family, and it will totally destroy the organic farmers. So remember, once you introduce that GMO into the environment, at this point in time, nobody knows whether it can ever be called back. I'd like to go back to 1996, when regulatory approval was given. Why did farmers ever grow GMOs? Across the border, soybeans in North Dakota, in Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, on primarily canola. And they were invited to a special informational meeting by Monsanto. And at that informational meeting, they were told three main things. Number one, it'd be more nutritious. Number two, it would be a bigger yielder. And number three, less chemicals. And I think the third issue, less chemicals, really caught the farmer's ear. And in talking to farmers, a lot of them, because using chemicals, it's expensive. And farmers like myself realized the damage we were doing to the environment with half a century of hundreds of tons of chemicals on the prairies every year. But what happened within 2, 3, and 4 years? Number one, more chemical use than ever before because of the new superweeds that had developed. So farmers are using about 3 times more chemicals on trying to control the new superweed that has been established. And that's not only in canola fields. It's in wheat fields, barley fields, right across the prairies, in municipal land, government land. It has spread all over. And if I have time, I'll show some overheads showing the spread of the superweed. So now we have more chemical use. What about nutritious, or like I refer to, quality? The quality is much poorer than conventional canola because it has now raised up the what we call the uric acid content of canola. Because by inserting that gene, they have found that it has altered other structure of that plant, which reduces the yield and quality of it. So now we got about 6.2% less yield in canola. And even the United States Department of Agriculture about 6 or 7 weeks ago confirmed that the yield drop, or yield drag as they refer to, in soybeans has been about 15%. And back in 1996, they were told other things, the farmers. We'd now be able to feed a hungry world. We'd always have sustainable agriculture. Believe me, as a farmer for half a century, we don't need the Monsantos of the world to feed a hungry world. And that is something that we have to look at. We now have less yield, more chemical use, more danger to our environment, and less production. If anything is going to lead to more world hunger or starvation, it's the introduction of GMOs. And I'm sincere about that. So those are some of the things, the biggest areas that I'm concerned about. But I think I should touch on a very important issue. And that what I'm really concerned about now is the introduction of drugs produced by, as they refer to, as pharma plants or pharmaceutical plants. I think that is the worst curse that is coming. Because there was over 300 plots in the US alone last year on plants producing drugs. There are about 6 major drugs now being produced by plants. And they are grown out in the wild. And what plants are they using? Primarily corn or maize or sunflowers. And I think that I should maybe take the time and mention what are some of these drugs being produced by plants right now. Number one, vaccines. Number two, industrial enzymes. Number 3, blood thinners. Number 4, blood clotting proteins. Number 5, growth hormones. And the last one, contraceptive drugs. Now, I had some scientists tell me from the University of Indiana, Ohio, and also Nebraska, say that, and they gave me examples of the danger of this, because they're saying they're not only cross-pollinating already in close cousins, but also distant cousins, especially in sunflowers. And they gave me an example. They said if a person has major surgery, and then you eat a food laced with a blood thinner, or another example they gave me, what happens if a woman, if she's pregnant and eats a food laced with a contraceptive? And why our governments, Canadian and American governments, have allowed this to be grown in the wild or in the open? It's unbelievable, because they knew that this would happen. They knew back in 1986, 1988, that it would contaminate, and yet it's still allowed. Monsanto's police or Monsanto's reps will go into any farmer's field that they choose, and they'll trespass, and I'm not scared to use the word steal farmer seeds or plants. And if a farmer catches Monsanto's reps, whether it's their gene police or their own representatives, and they'll say to Monsanto's police, get out, you're trespassing, you're stealing some of our crop, they'll just get laughed at. And the farmer will say, I'm going to take you to court. And they say, go right ahead and take us to court, but the time we're through with you and we'll drag you through the court system, you won't have a farm left. So when farmers hear what it has cost me to fight Monsanto, 6 years of my life, and about $300,000 plus, how can any average person stand up to Monsanto in court? You can't. There is no justice for the average person. And again, going back to GMOs, a lot of people have said to me, all right, you've always thought you were a progressive farmer, latest inventions and machinery and so on. Are you totally against GMOs? And that's a difficult question to answer. And I answer it this way. If anyone brings anything into the environment or releases into the environment, no matter how good or how bad it is, and you destroy the property of others, you destroy biodiversity, and you take away choice, it should not be allowed. No one has that right to introduce something in the environment that destroys the property of others. So that's why my wife and I have taken such a strong stand on this. We felt that farmers should never ever lose that right to use their own seed. And I said, you'll stop the future development of seeds and plants, to climatic and soil conditions. Another important issue comes up with that. If through GMOs released into the environment, and you through the spread of GMO genes contaminating and render everything GMOs, what happens if you get down to one or two varieties and you have a disease or a blight or some disaster? What have you to fall back on? What have you to fall back on? Say there's some blight or disease in American corn before they could go back to Mexico and get new varieties. Half of the indigenous corn of Mexico, up to 10,000 varieties, are now contaminated. So you'll destroy the point of origin, whether it's potatoes from Brazil, from Bolivia, or corn from either Guatemala or Mexico. So those are some of the other important issues. Another issue, economics. We as Canadians cannot sell one bushel of canola to the European Union. So that has had a devastating effect on our economy, especially canola farmers. Honey producers, a lot of our honey now is being returned from Europe because our honey is now contaminated with GMOs. A bee doesn't know which flower is a GMO flower and which flower is not a GMO, so it just goes on and on and on. And this is the result with the introduction of GMOs. So with that, I'd like to just go over a few.
Can I make a request?
Sure.
An urgent question or important question before we go to the overheads. Mr. Schmeiser has nicely offered to answer some questions. So,
I mean, many farmers in the U.S. must also have been affected by this pollen. Are there any similar cases in the U.S.? Have they been resolved?
When Monsanto laid the lawsuit against me in 1996, they also laid, almost at the same time, a lawsuit against a soybean farmer in North Dakota, the Nelson family, and also against a corn farmer in Indiana. And those two cases have been settled out of court. Now, there's about 550 other lawsuits by Monsanto against farmers in the U.S. and Canada. They're in abeyance now until they find out what happens in the Supreme Court, the decision of the Supreme Court of Canada. But having said that, the organic farmers of Saskatchewan have now laid a class action lawsuit against Monsanto and Adventus on the issue of liability, and also have asked and applied for a court injunction against Monsanto against the introduction of GMO wheat.
There's a question over there. Yes, please.
How many farmers in Canada or the U.S. are still growing the GMO canola, even though there's reduced yields, et cetera? I mean, are they still getting people to sign their contracts, and why?
Well, back by us now, you can't grow canola. It's all GMOs. So that's another good question. The University of Manitoba took 34 of registered certified pedigree seed stocks of canola that are sold in Canada and did a test, and that's released now. And they found that 33 out of 34 are contaminated now with GMOs, Monsanto's and other GMO companies. And some of the contamination of that pure seed stock is so high you could grow a crop of GMOs. Now, if you go back to what the judge ruled, the first judge ruled, if a farmer knows or ought to know that a seed is contaminated or his soil is contaminated with GMOs, and you see that, you violate the patent. What are farmers back home going to do in the spring? Because if they go to these seed companies, they know the seed is contaminated. They can get a lawsuit overnight. So what really, when I speak to organic farmers, I try to impress on them what has happened to me can happen to them overnight if their organic crops get contaminated by cross-pollination or direct seed movement, and then get a lawsuit on top of it, and their choice is gone.
What is the stand of the regulatory agencies in Canada, given the evidence that GMO seeds and genes travel across the field, you know, to other fields? Why are they still allowing Monsanto and other companies to sell these seeds, given that they don't follow regulatory stipulations?
When regulatory approval was given to Monsanto way back, both in Canada and the United States, this is how it's worded: for the unconfined release into the environment by the Canadian and American government. Unconfined release in the environment, and they knew it would spread. Now, what has happened in Canada, maybe you've heard about 4 weeks ago, the government of Canada was working with Monsanto, both on canola, but now especially on wheat, to develop GMO wheat on government research stations and test plots. So there was such an uproar because we would lose over 80% of our markets if GMO wheat was ever introduced. And so now the government publicly announced they were withdrawn from working with Monsanto to develop GMO wheat, but it is already developed. And the unusual part we found out is that through the Freedom of Information, that the government of Canada would be getting a royalty from every bushel of GMO that was sold. That's how involved our governments are. I was not only fighting Monsanto, I was fighting my own federal government. And remember, I was a member of that government. I was a member at one time. And how they have been able to infiltrate into even our Canadian Food Inspection Agency, the Department of Agriculture, it's unbelievable. So now I have, and also the biotech industry.
Maybe we
can
have a combination of questions and overheads while we're watching. A question right there in the middle? Yes.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there are any farmers unions and farmers advocacy groups with the potential power or the interest, or maybe they're even in the process of going through attempts to push some sort of legislation in through and work, attack on that sort of aspect of it as well. Is there any legislative branch of this advocacy?
You mentioned National Farmers Union. National Farmers Union was also one of the groups that was an intervener in my case, Sierra Club, and there was two Washington-based foundations behind me, a foundation from India, so my case has become really international. But the federal governments have tried to steer clear of bringing any legislation in. They have decided they would like to have the courts decide it. And that's why it has gone to the Supreme Court. But that's wrong, and a lot of people feel eventually it will go back to the people of Canada through Parliament to decide the whole issue of patenting life forms. But already that has been decided by the Supreme Court. You cannot patent a higher life form in Canada.
Yes, we're back at the back.
Well, I'd just like to make a comment that people here always have to remember the Boyce Thompson Institute is headquartered right here on this campus and is one of the biggest developers of genetically modified organisms probably in the United States, maybe in the world. They're responsible currently for development of virus-based GMOs along with a whole host of other things. The other thing is this institution is responsible for the development and testing of RBST, one of the first genetically modified growth hormones released in the United States, and the Canadian government was smart enough to recognize that Cornell studies were falsified. And that's why the Canadian government didn't allow the use of bovine growth hormone, RBST, in Canada. So this institution where you all study and we all allow to operate here in our community is highly responsible for a lot of these issues.
You brought up a very good point. I spent 2 weeks with Japanese scientists this past summer and also with German and Scottish and Swiss and the Netherlands scientists in the last year. The Japanese have just completed a report or by the School of Science in Japan, and they used the same documentation from Monsanto that was presented to the American and the Canadian government for the introduction of GMO food. In the United States and Canada, our governments have deemed that GMO foods are substantially equivalent. But they are not the scientists from other parts of the world. And the Japanese School of Science have said the documentation that was submitted to our governments here was fraudulent and it was falsified. This is coming from scientists in other parts of the world. And believe me, I think the Japanese scientists, the Germans, the English, the Swiss, the Netherlands, they have just as smart scientists as Monsanto has, or the governments here, but our governments don't even test it. It's never tested. The food, GMO foods are not tested for the safety. So again, it's a 100-page research. They've translated it all into English. I've already submitted it to our Canadian Food Inspection Agency. I haven't heard anything. But scientists from all over the world are telling us, go slow, you better check what you're feeding to your people.
We're aware of the regulatory revolving door between industry and government. Scientists here at Cornell and other universities are expected to seek funding through private agencies, private industry, like Monsanto and others. I'm sure most people here are aware that Monsanto got its bovine growth hormone from Cornell. In Canada, do researchers have this? Researchers expected to do the same thing, to get money through industry to do their research?
The bulk of the money coming to our universities, research and that, now comes from the private purse and not from the public purse. And that's where the whole problem is. Scientists are no longer free to really express or to print or publish the findings they really find. If you're funded, if a scientist is funded by a private corporation, do you think he's going to say something negative if his funding is going to be cut off, or the university? And that's a terrible position for a scientist to be put into. I have a brother that's a scientist. And every university from British Columbia to Ontario, scientists have given me information confidentially because they felt that some of this information should get out. And I remember a scientist from the University of Alberta, Edmonton, said if he would be found to give out this information, he said he's got two kids, he would be fired tomorrow. But he felt so strongly that some of this information should get out. So I think that we have a real suppression of scientific knowledge that should be out in the general public because the funding is private and it should go back to the public purse.
I just wanted to say that it's the same thing with the state and with the political process as well. I mean, candidates, whether they're Republican or Democrat, are being funded by these exact same corporations as well, and that has a lot to do with how the government responds to these situations and who gets appointed to what regulatory agencies, etc.
See, that's where the difference is with the Europeans, Asians, and so on. Most of the funding comes from the public purse. They're free to express, like, say, for instance, the School of Science in Japan.
Two things. One is I just wanted folks, ecologically minded folks, to consider the new push for genetically engineered trees and what that will include. But my question for you, thank you so much for coming down and sharing this with us, is if you would have a suggestion for what the organic farmers in Ithaca, for what our small organic community, what might be our first steps in preparing some type of fence or organizing or what are we to do?
I think that any farmer that decides to grow a GMO crop should, a realization should be by that farmer that by growing it, he will contaminate, if you're an organic farmer or his neighbor, a conventional farmer. And I think that realization should be made to these people that what can happen. And if a farmer thinks he can grow a better crop or increase yields at the expense of somebody else, that's wrong. And to lay a liability or a charge against a person, liability is a very difficult court case or procedure to take, because how do you know where the contamination really came from? Whether it's your neighbor, or is it 10 miles down the road, or was it a truck driving past? So I think governments, your representatives, should be made aware that with the introduction of any more GMOs, you will destroy the organic farmer and conventional farmer. And I should bring something else up. In the Canadian Seed Growers Association, the president, by the name of Dale Adolph, made a very startling statement in the Canadian press last August, and he said there is so much objection in the world for the further introduction of any more GMOs. And he said the way we do that is to contaminate. And he went on, exact words, it's a hell of a thing to say, but the way we do this is to take farmers' choice away. And that was really brought home to me last fall when I was in South Africa, when a lady head of the Africa Bio said that with the introduction of GMO maize and corn from the United States, we will not only be able to contaminate the country of South Africa in 4 years, we will be able to contaminate the whole continent of Africa in 4 years. Their whole direction now is to contaminate, choice is gone. I think organic farmers don't realize how serious the situation is.
I had a lot of questions for you. I've been following the case pretty closely. I read the judge's decisions, the reasons for judgment, and I had a series of questions for you. The first question was, and I just want to make sure that I have the facts right. You sprayed your 97 crop with Roundup?
No.
You didn't?
Yeah, no.
Okay, because the proceeding said that you had.
Okay.
The judge's proceeding. From the 97 in field number 2, it said that you sprayed roughly 3 acres with Roundup.
Oh, okay, how that came about, and that one of the overheads would show that. The Power Corporation will spray the ditch or around power poles to maintain weed control. And that what was sprayed.
Okay.
But not my crop was them. See, use a pack, like I mentioned, I never used Roundup. But seed from that, part of that seed from that area got into my crop along with another farmer that had grown GMOs. In fact, the farmer had grown GMO canola right next to me in 1996, and we weren't aware of it until Monsanto had produced the documents at my trial.
What was the area of the crop that you sprayed with the Roundup? The court paper said roughly 3 acres.
Well, that's what I estimated. It was in the ditch.
Okay.
That's in the ditch along my field.
Okay. And then the court papers also said that you saved the seed from that you had combined, you'd swathed it and combined it, and kept the seed and loaded it in your Ford pickup.
Yeah, part of that seed, because when that was done, there was only a few plants by the edge of my field. And in harvesting, we estimate some of that seed got into my Ripper seed supply. That's why some of my fields had no contamination and some had 2 or 3%, because my wife and I were seed developers and seed was being used from all 8 parcels of land.
Okay. They said that the seed was loaded in a truck and then you drove that and then you loaded the seed to another truck and drove that to HMS to have them treat the seed.
That's right. See, and only part of that was used for seed, because then seed was taken from other parts of land. But you've got to remember what the judge ruled, that the rate of contamination, if you go through the records, does not matter. It doesn't matter how it gets there, whether it's 2%. In fact, the judge asked that question, if you go through the record. He said, if Percy Schmeiser's fields were contaminated 2%, does he violate the patent? And the answer was yes.
You seeded the 98 field with seed that you collected from the swath that you made, plus other seed?
From all 8 quarters, okay. All 8 parcels.
And then you seeded the thousand plus acres of
yield. Yeah, and I have to smile. They say it was a neat and tidy rose. I seed with a broadcaster. So it's broadcast. So I don't know where the neat and tidy rose came from, but that's what Monsanto says, yeah. But you must remember, the in-house, okay, that testing was not done by third party.
Right.
That grade was done by Monsanto's own.
Yeah. A question while we're on that train, is that according to the court papers, the judge said that Monsanto came to your property and by some order of the court was allowed to go to your land in 98 and sample your 98 fields. The judge said that Monsanto they had an oral agreement to give you a notice, a day's notice.
And my lawyer.
And your lawyer, which your lawyer did not receive or you received. And then they went and the two Monsanto representatives stated that they spoke to you before they were going to go sample your field, and either way, you did not accompany them when they sampled it.
That's correct. They actually came to where my residence was, and they came out to see me at the farm, and I said, agreement was, I have to go with you. And they wouldn't allow me, and they left.
Okay.
And I never, nobody has ever seen them take samples of my field. And the unusual part is that when they presented, they said they had samples from my field. Nobody seen them take it. Every bit of land location they submitted to the court was not my land. All the seed they said they got was not my land description. Not one parcel.
Yeah, along those
and
lines.
And they did the same to Rodney Nelson in North Dakota, said they got samples from his field. In fact, he said they got samples from a field that didn't even have to know on.
Because in the court proceedings, there was your lawyers put up a big fight as far as what got admitted as evidence. As what got admitted as evidence, whether or not they were able to use the 98 samples and the 97 samples for evidence. Is that going to affect, since the primary instigation here is they acquired evidence from your 97 field on the right of way, would that discourage you from planting on right of ways?
Well, you see, you have to go back to 1997. When we noticed it first, there were some plants after Power Corporation had sprayed, some plants that didn't die from the spraying of glyphosate. At 1997, we didn't even know there was a patent of GMOs or canola. You had to be invited to a special Monsanto informational meeting. At 1997, initially I thought that because it was sprayed for copper 15 years every year by the court, that there were some plants resistant to glyphosate had developed. That was our initial.
Would you still plant in the right of way, considering that Monsanto initially got the evidence taken? I don't have the guy's name, but the initial reason Monsanto was able to come after you is because he took samples from your right of way, which was considered public land, and it wasn't considered a theft of property. And that was admissible. Would you discourage people from planting?
Well, if you see back home, if you rent land or you lease land from the government, which is if there's some places where you can see, it's your crop. They had no right to even be in that. You see, it's your property. You lease land from the government. So it's just like if you have a car parked on the street, it doesn't give a Monsanto right to take a tire off because it's on public property. This is what I was just talking about, where they spray around the power poles for weed control. This is one of my wheat fields, and here's the road allowance. So it's hard to see on this overhead, but there's some plants that did not die, and the next one will show it more plain.
You're listening to Corporate Power and Patents on Life, a talk by Canadian farmer and activist Percy Schmeiser that took place in Ithaca last week. This is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, W201CD Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, or KFAR, Knoxville. We return to Percy Schmeiser.